generally in the population, Australian smoking rates have fallen to about either 13 or 15%, depending which report you read, but very, very low.
It's something to be proud about. Only 13 to 15% of the Australian population smokes. It's well below the global average, which sits at around 21%. But while Australians have banned the advertising of smoking, pioneered plain packaging and banned smoking in certain public places, the smoking rates among disadvantaged communities remains high. This is especially true of people in low socioeconomic areas.
If you look at low socioeconomic status areas of Australia, and if you look at the lowest socioeconomic status areas of Australia, then at least half of the smokers in Australia come from the lowest socioeconomic areas.
This is Billy Boneski. She's an associate professor at the University of Newcastle and an NHMRC Career Development Fellow. Low socioeconomic areas are one group to worry about, but the term disadvantaged communities encompasses people with mental health issues, people who are unemployed, and people who are homeless. It is these pockets in the community that have a very worrying rate of smoking.
But what is much more relevant is what these smoking rates are like amongst highly disadvantaged groups, like people with mental illness or addiction problems or unemployed people or people who are homeless. So amongst those groups that are vulnerable, then smoking rates are 60, 70, 80% of those groups are smokers.
There are a number of reasons why smoking is high among these disadvantaged communities. Very high on that list of reasons is the social acceptability of smoking. If your mother, grandfather, and cousins all smoke, it's likely you will too.
It's a social activity. You drink and you smoke, and it's still very much accepted socially. So there's that social context of smoking. But also there's a bit of an intergenerational problem where people who are disadvantaged tend to smoke because they feel stressed because of their tough living conditions. And then children of those people pick up smoking at a very young age, which makes them then, when they're adults, very nicotine dependent. So they're highly addicted, which makes it much harder for them to quit. And then they have children that take up smoking. And so you get this vicious cycle of smoking in these communities and nicotine addiction.
One thing you might have heard mentioned there was stress. There is a belief that smoking helps to relieve stress, but it is no more than a myth.
It's actually a stimulant, nicotine, so it's not something that's helping in the long term to distress someone.
Michelle DiGiacomo is a senior research fellow at the Centre for Cardiovascular and Chronic Care at UTS. She says that this misconception stems from the fact smoking calms an addiction, not your stress levels.
Basically, when someone smokes a cigarette, dopamine is released, so it gives a feeling of pleasure or comfort or that relaxation, but it's very brief. Whereas the reality is what is happening is that the person is relieving symptoms of withdrawal. A lot of research has shown that quitting smoking will just eliminate that cycle and that loop that kind of makes people feel like they're de-stressing when they're really just feeding the withdrawal.
Let's take the example of one disadvantaged group, people with mental health issues. Historically, people in mental health facilities were encouraged to smoke to calm them down, according to Dr. Della Rowley.
Well, I don't say that they do now, but historically they have encouraged because, you know, when things are difficult in a mental health service, when you're having, a psychotic episode and behaviour is difficult, it's been quite handy to be able to say, here, calm down, have a cigarette, go into the corner and, you know, be quiet. So some people have, in the past, have gone into a mental health service as a non-smoker and they've come out as a smoker.
Dr. Della Rowley is from Flinders University. She's recently completed her doctorate looking at how we should address the high rates of smoking among people with mental health issues. You wouldn't be the first to think that removing cigarettes from this group might actually cause more harm than good because of the side effects of withdrawal. But Dr. Rowley says the opposite is true.
No, not at all. The reverse is true. Their mental health improves. And in fact, they can reduce some of the very heavy drugs that they need to take for mental illness, sometimes up to a half. So, you know, that's the message that people don't seem to be aware of enough, is that if you quit and you have a mental illness, not only does your physical health improve, but your mental health improves.
Too often, health services for people with mental health issues fall into the trap of focusing on the mind and not the body.
One of my participants in my interview said that, you know, people in the mental health area, psychiatrists and others, are interested in you from the neck upwards only, and there's been no emphasis whatsoever on encouraging and supporting people with mental health problems to quit.
In many of these health services, smoking is banned. However, Dr. Rowley says more support is needed to help encourage people to accompany these bans.
Now, what health services do is they have smoking bans. When you go into a health service, you're not allowed to smoke. And then, you know, ideally there should be a good deal of support that accompanies that. You should be given some encouragement, some brief intervention, some assistance, maybe given some nicotine replacement therapy so you can overcome some of the issues of your nicotine addiction.
Speaking more generally about disadvantaged communities, Michelle says that money and geography are two of the main barriers to overcome smoking in these communities.
So they might be excluded, or maybe for financial reasons, they don't have access to the services that other people do, or geographically they might not have things available nearby, or things might just not be appropriate for their needs. So different groups and cultures maybe may have different preferences or what they perceive to be as acceptable and appropriate. So if it's not meeting their needs, then that's an access issue.
The hip pocket is a difficult issue to juggle. It can be expensive to buy quitting treatment, but smoking is expensive as well. Dr. Bineski says it is a case of short-term pain for long-term gain.
It's much less in the long term. So I suppose there's a failure to see that if they invest in these medicines instead of their, you know, what they pay for their cigarettes, in the long term, they won't be paying any money at all, either on the medications or on the cigarettes. So there's a saving to be made. It just needs to be explained to people that even if there's an initial outlay for a little while until you have quit for these nicotine replacement therapies, it's worthwhile because then in the long term you make huge savings.
In addition, some of the treatment options are subsidised.
So there's nicotine replacement therapy, for example, like patches and gum and inhalers that people can use to help them quit smoking. But the only one of those treatments that's actually subsidised on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme, the PBS, are patches. And a lot of people don't even know that nicotine patches are subsidised.
And then there is the price of cigarettes. The Labor government has recently announced they will jack up the price to $40 a packet by 2020. Dr. Della Rowley says price increases are generally a good strategy for reducing smoking.
We know that the best thing to do in the general community is a price increase on cigarettes. So when the price goes up by 10%, you can expect a 4% reduction in smoking rates.
Dr. Bineski agrees with the price increase, but says that we need to think about how the extra tax is spent.
But amongst disadvantaged communities, because people are so heavily nicotine dependent because they've been smoking for such a long time and their entire social community is one of smokers, that those price increases really place quite a considerable financial burden on people who can't quit. So, you know, I suppose there's some thinking that needs to occur there as to how the revenue of those taxations are spent.